File 61.
The pacifist humanitarian idea may indeed become an excellent one when the most superior type of manhood will have succeeded in subjugating the world to such an extent that this type is then sole master of the earth. This idea could have an injurious effect only in the measure according to which its application would become difficult, and finally impossible. So, first of all, the fight, and then pacifism. If the case were different, it would mean that mankind has already passed the zenith of its development, and accordingly the end would not be the supremacy of some moral ideal, but degeneration into barbarism and consequent chaos. People may laugh at this statement, but our planet has been moving through the spaces of ether for millions and millions of years, uninhabited by men, and at some future date may easily begin to do so again. If men should forget that wherever they have reached a superior level of existence, it was not the result of following the ideas of crazy visionaries, but by acknowledging and rigorously observing the iron laws of nature. All that we admire in the world today, its science, its art, its technical development and discoveries, are the products of the creative activities of a few peoples, and it may be true that their first beginnings must be attributed to one race. The maintenance of civilization is wholly dependent on such peoples. Should they perish, all that makes this earth beautiful will descend with them into the grave. However great, for example, be the influence which the soil exerts on men, this influence will always vary according to the race in which it produces its effect. Dearth of soil may stimulate one race to the most strenuous efforts and highest achievement, while for another race the poverty of the soil may be the cause of misery, and finally of undernourishment, with all its consequences. The internal characteristics of a people are always the causes which determine the nature of the effect that outer circumstances have on them. What reduces one race to starvation trains another race to harder work. All the great civilizations of the past became decadent because the originally creative race died out as a result of contamination of the blood. The most profound cause of such a decline is to be found in the fact that the people ignored the principle that all culture depends on men, and not the reverse. In other words, in order to preserve a certain culture, the type of manhood that creates such a culture must be preserved. But such a preservation goes hand in hand with the inexorable law that it is the strongest and best who must triumph, and that they have the right to endure. He who would live must fight. He who does not wish to fight in this world, where permanent struggle is the law of life, has not the right to exist. Such a saying may sound hard, but, after all, that is how the matter really stands. Yet far harder is the lot of him who believes that he can overcome nature, and thus in reality insults her. Distress, misery, and disease are her rejoinders. Whoever ignores or despises the laws of race really deprives himself of the happiness to which he believes he can attain, for he places an obstacle in the victorious path of the superior race, and by so doing he interferes with a prerequisite condition of all human progress. loaded with the burden of humanitarian sentiment, he falls back to the level of those who are unable to raise themselves in the scale of being. It would be futile to attempt to discuss the question as to what race or races were the original standard-bearers of human culture, and were thereby the real founders of all that we understand by the word humanity. It is much simpler to deal with this question in so far as it relates to the present time. Here the answer is simple and clear. Every manifestation of human culture, every product of art, science, and technical skill which we see before our eyes today is almost exclusively the product of the Aryan creative power. This very fact fully justifies the conclusion that it was the Aryan alone who founded a superior type of humanity. Therefore, he represents the archetype of what we understand by the term man. He is the Prometheus of mankind, from whose shining brow the divine spark of genius has at all times flashed forth, always kindling anew that fire which, in the form of knowledge, illuminated the dark night by drawing aside the veil of mystery, and thus showing man how to rise and become master over all the other beings of the earth. Should he be forced to disappear, a profound darkness will descend on the earth. Within a few thousand years, human culture will vanish, and the world will become a desert. If we divide mankind into three categories, founders of culture, bearers of culture, and destroyers of culture, the Aryan alone can be considered as representing the first category. It was he who laid the groundwork and erected the walls of every great structure in human culture. Only the shape and colour of such structures are to be attributed to the individual characteristics of the various nations. It is the Aryan who has furnished the great building stones and plans for the edifices of all human progress. Only the way in which these plans have been executed is to be attributed to the qualities of each individual race. Within a few decades, the whole of Eastern Asia, for instance, appropriated a culture and called such a culture its own, whereas the basis of that culture was the Greek mind and Teutonic skill as we know it. Only the external form, at least to a certain degree, shows the traits of an Asiatic inspiration. It is not true, as some believe, that Japan adds European technique to a culture of her own. The truth, rather, is that European science and techniques are just decked out with the peculiar characteristics of Japanese civilization. The foundations of actual life in Japan today are not those of the native Japanese culture, although this characterizes the external features of the country, which features strike the eye of European observers on account of their fundamental difference from us. But the real foundations of contemporary Japanese life are the enormous scientific and technical achievements of Europe and America, that is to say, of Aryan peoples. Only by adopting these achievements as the foundations of their own progress can the various nations of the Orient take a place in contemporary world progress. The scientific and technical achievements of Europe and America provide the basis on which the struggle for daily livelihood is carried on in the Orient. They provide the necessary arms and instruments for this struggle, and only the outer forms of these instruments have become gradually adapted to Japanese ways of life. If, from today onwards, the Aryan influence on Japan would cease, and if we suppose that Europe and America would collapse, then the present progress of Japan in science and technique might still last for a short duration. But within a few decades, the inspiration would dry up, and native Japanese character would triumph, while the present civilization would become fossilized and fall back into the sleep from which it was aroused about 70 years ago by the impact of Aryan culture. We may therefore draw the conclusion that, just as the present Japanese development has been due to Aryan influence, so in the immemorial past an outside influence and an outside culture brought into existence the Japanese culture of that day. This opinion is very strongly supported by the fact that the ancient civilization of Japan actually became fossilized and petrified. Such a process of senility can happen only if a people loses the racial cell which originally had been creative, or if the outside influence should be withdrawn after having awakened and maintained the first cultural developments in that region. If it be shown that a people owes the fundamental elements of its culture to foreign races, assimilating and elaborating such elements, and if subsequently that culture becomes fossilized whenever the external influence ceases, then such a race may be called the depository, but never the creator of a culture. If we subject the different peoples to a strict test from this standpoint, we shall find that scarcely any one of them has originally created a culture, but almost all have been merely the recipients of a culture created elsewhere. This development may be depicted as always happening somewhat in the following way. Aryan tribes, often almost ridiculously small in number, subjugated foreign peoples, and stimulated by the conditions of life which their new country offered them, fertility, the nature of the climate, etc., and profiting also by the abundance of manual labour furnished them by the inferior race, they developed intellectual and organizing faculties which had hitherto been dormant in these conquering tribes. Within the course of a few thousand years or even centuries, they gave life to cultures whose primitive traits completely corresponded to the character of the founders, though modified by adaptation to the peculiarities of the soil and the characteristics of the subjugated people. But finally, the conquering race offended against the principles which they first had observed, namely the maintenance of their racial stock unmixed, and they began to intermingle with the subjugated people. Thus, they put an end to their own separate existence, for the original sin committed in paradise has always been followed by the expulsion of the guilty parties. After 1,000 years or more, the last visible traces of those former masters may then be found in a lighter tint of the skin which the Aryan blood had bequeathed to the subjugated race, and in a fossilized culture of which those Aryans had been the original creators. For just as the blood of the conqueror, who was a conqueror not only in body, but also in spirit, got submerged in the blood of the subject race, so the substance disappeared out of which the torch of human culture and progress was kindled. insofar as the blood of the former ruling race has left a light nuance of colour in the blood of its descendants, as a token and a memory, the night of cultural life is rendered less dim and dark by a mild light radiated from the products of those who were the bearers of the original fire. Their radiance shines across the barbarism to which the subjected race has reverted, and might often lead the superficial observer to believe that he sees before him an image of the present race, when really he is looking into a mirror wherein only the past is reflected.